All right, folks, Duke Machado here, broadcasting RNHA News Podcast. Tonight we're interviewing Kristen Alamo Rowan. Telling you, with a middle name like Alamo, I don't know if that's your middle name or your maiden name, but we're going to find out here soon enough. Kristen, welcome to the program. How you doing?
Thank you for having me. I am doing great. I am actually in the district right now in Caldwell, just leaving a GOP meetup with some of our friends down here in the College Station Caldwell area.
Hmm. So let's get the scoop on Alamo. Is that a middle name, a last name, or tell us a story on that?
So I was born Kristen Alamo. That is my name. My father is from Peru. I'm a first generation American on his side. He was, born in Peru. His family, direct lineage, you know, the Incan Indians. They speak Spanish and Quechua, and so that is my maiden name. I am married and took my husband's name, last name Rowan. So in high school, you know, I played soccer, and so I was actually known as Alamo. That's the name that a lot of times they would call me is Alamo. So being in Texas, you know, that's a good name. My dad, when he came here, he didn't know how popular the Alamo was or really the significance, but that is my name, that's my company name. I own Alamo Real Estate in Waco, Texas, and I'm very proud of that.
So how's the real estate business these days? People are buying up houses left and right, aren't they?
Oh, yes. So we have seen a big influx of people coming from California, from different places, and I am happy to say, put some worries at ease, that a lot of these people are escaping the ideology and escaping the different government, you know, regulations and mandates that you've got going on in California, places like that. So they're leaving behind those flawed ideologies, and they're coming to be, you know, enriched in the South. Texas, we have such a great economy. You know, even on a worldwide scale, Texas has such a phenomenal economy. We're very blessed here in this state, and you know, tourism has actually taken off quite a bit in Waco, and so we have Baylor, we've got Magnolia Tourism there, so we actually own a vacation rental as well. My husband and I remodel property, so we're really involved in all aspects of real estate, and it's definitely a healthy market. We've stabilized. We were a seller's market. You know, prices were just continuing to rise, and we stabilized a bit. And so all in all, we're healthy and, you know, just doing really well here in Waco and in Texas.
One thing I noticed, and I mentioned this once before, is when someone from California sells their house and they move to Texas, they get a lot of bang for their buck. I mean, their dollar goes a long way. You know, they sell their small million-dollar home, and they come here for half the price and build something three times as big.
Yes.
It's we have a great environment here for families, raising families. And, you know, I'm a fifth-generation Texan myself. I wasn't cool enough to be named Alamo, but I'm a little bit jealous there, Kristen. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back after this message. All right, folks, Duke Machado, RNHA News Podcast. We're back visiting with Kristen Alamo Rowan. having a real good visit about just how awesome it is to be here in Texas. So you're running for Congress. I mean, there's Congressional District 17 is Waco, College Station, a little bit of Austin, a little bit of rural Central Texas. You know, you've been in Waco, you've been working in the area. I know if you're in the real estate, it kind of gives you a glimpse of the different people in the community because, you know, when you're doing real estate, you get kind of close to your clients. You understand their finances. You understand, you know, what makes them tick and really how they're generating their revenue, their income. And so you see everything, all the good policies in place right now, don't you?
I do, yes. Definitely one of the things that has really helped even myself, because I am considered self-employed as a real estate broker. All real estate agents are considered self-employed. Just, you know, lowering taxes, deregulation, those types of things, you know, really help to drive the economy. And, you know, they say that, you know, the rising water lifts all ships. So a great economy is great for all Americans. And that's one of the reasons that I support our president, is because we have such an excellent economy. And across the board, unemployment is at historic lows. And so we really reap the benefits of those types of policies here in Texas, especially.
Now, well, you said you were in Caldwell out in College Station area. I was going to ask you about your College Station ties, because it seems like a lot of voters in our district come from out there in Brazos County.
Yes. So I don't have any real personal ties as far as family goes that live here. I do have a cousin that is attending A&M. But one of the reasons that I'm spending just as much time here as I am visiting other places is so that they can get to know me for that reason. Being in Caldwell is actually a small community in this area. Really reminds me of where I come from. You know, we had a potluck style dinner this evening. And those are the kinds of things that I'm used to growing up in East Texas. Just the fellowship and community, and just a sense of laid back, just, you know, feeling safe and right at home. And So I've enjoyed being here. People actually have recognized me. They come up to me because they've seen me here. So I'm making my presence known to all people so that they know that I am here for them and I will be their voice in Washington.
So obviously, if you're going to win here, you must be pro-life. Tell me what your positions are on that.
Absolutely. So my position is very simple. I believe that life begins at conception. I am a Christian, first and foremost. That is part of my identity. That is who I am. That, you know, where God ends and I begin, there's no separation there. I live, or try to live, as much, you know, in him as possible. No one is perfect, but as far as my views on life and abortion, I believe that life begins at conception, and there are no exceptions to that, that all life is blessed and, you know, given by God. And I know that there's a lot of emotion, a lot of, you know, situations that come up where people may say that they feel that there should be exceptions, and a lot of those arguments are emotional ones, and I, you know, sympathize with people in different situations. However, I do believe that, you know, the most innocent life among us is the most valuable, and it should be protected.
And what is your hot button issue?
Well, my hot button issue is probably healthcare, because there is a misconception that people have that healthcare is somehow a right, and that the government should get involved in that. I actually do not have health insurance, personally, my family, we cannot have health insurance. And I have some great ideas on how to help people that are underinsured or not insured. There's actually programs that are in place, like direct primary care. It already exists. Most people don't know about it. That's a problem. I think that educating people so they can make those decisions is, really another area for me that I feel passionate about because, as a conservative, our goal is less government and more personal responsibility. So by giving you the information you need to make those decisions for yourself, it's just going to give you that freedom over your life that you deserve. And so for me, healthcare is one of those because I personally know the struggle. They say the struggle is real. I know that struggle, because I'm down here. I'm not a politician. That's why I'm hustling. I'm a businesswoman, so I know what it takes to do the job, to get things done. And so that's the kind of mentality that I'm going to take to Washington. I'm a Texas girl. We know how to work hard. We do things big here in Texas. And so I'm just so excited to be a part of this piece and this movement. I really feel that God is calling America to create things, to turn to Him, and just, I feel that 2020 is going to be such a pivotal year, for all of these movements. I heard of some new movements, actually, I believe it's called Texas. That's some, Latinos leading the, Democratic, ideology. And, that's awesome to me. I really feel that, there's an awakening happening. People are realizing what freedom really is. So aside from healthcare, I think just, keeping government small and, really just being how we intended to be, free, encouraging freedom as well, freedom of thought. Those are just really some things that I'm passionate about.
So something I noticed, and I know how I feel about it, but I want your take on, I believe we have one, maybe two candidates in Congressional District 17 primary here who are not even in the area. Is that right?
So we had a career politician rent a place here. He lost up in Dallas in 2018, and he moved down here. We do have, honestly, there were two that I didn't even know who they were, never heard of them. But the filing deadline was on Monday, and I just noticed their names were added to the list of two of the last people that, that filed. So they're kind of spread out. There's some in Waco, some in College Station, it's possible that some don't actually live in this district.
What do you think it's going to take to pull ahead in this race?
So my focus is being on the ground and meeting people, because I've been told that money is such a factor in this race. And I, again, as far as freedom, as me promoting that, is also freedom of thought. And so for me as an individual, I don't believe that the status quo necessarily has to be the way that things are handled. So, money is just all that everyone talks about. Anyone that I've met with, they're almost not considering you a viable candidate unless you have, $500,000 to put in this race. But as a small business owner and, like I say, someone who gets it done, it is the hustle that to get to the people, to shake their hand, to look them in the eye, and to answer their questions. Prerogative. That's why I'm traveling everywhere. I'm shaking hands. Tomorrow I'm going to be actually knocking doors in College Station, hanging door tags. I think that some people are under the impression that it's about money and advertising and, throwing money at it. And for me, it's his connection with people, shaking their hand, looking them in the eye, and letting them know who I am and the fact that I'm here for them. And the reason that I'm running is for them. It's not for me, it's for them, to serve them. So I really feel that that's important. I think a lot of candidates are not focused on that.
Well, what are your thoughts on dealing with illegal immigration, those people who are here already? I mean, I know we need to secure the border, but those who are here now, how do we deal with those guys?
Yes. Yeah, so my thoughts are that the people that were brought here, we'll just use for example specifically people that were brought here as children. They have been in our education system. They have reaped the benefits of that education. I believe that we should, allow a pathway to citizenship. I do not, agree or support with amnesty, but they should be given the opportunity to have a pathway to citizenship. Now, I believe that the responsibility should fall on their shoulders for, the process and, them having to abide by the rules and do everything by the book. But I believe that specifically for people that were brought here as children, they should be given an opportunity to pursue a path to citizenship. Again, the wall, I believe that we need a wall system, not just a physical barrier, but I know that there's a lot of technologies that are being used that I feel that are important in helping to monitor and secure the border. I have actually spoken to people in regards to this topic, and I asked them, I said, why are people coming here illegally? And, one of the things that I was told is that it is people that are uneducated, that don't know any better, that are coming here because they see it as, such a prosperous land, a land of opportunity, and they're coming here with this hope, and they don't really know what they're doing, and so I think in regards to that, if that's the case, I'm in support of having some type of outreach and education to let people know about our processes and advocating for communicating the pathways and reaching out to people that are wanting to do that. I mean, because we have a crisis. It is something that needs immediate attention. And I think that there's so many facets to it because you have people that are still coming. You have people that were brought here as children. So there's going to be multi facets to the situation and to solving it.
Mm-hmm. We don't hear a lot. It seems like lately the Islamic terrorism seems to not be as much in the news, but I always feel like it's there. It's always there. There's always people who want to harm us. Do you feel that way too, or do you think the media is just overhyping it all?
So here are my thoughts. Going back to immigration and the wall. So I think what people overlook, because it's so politicized by the left as being racist, is the fact that if I was a terrorist and I wanted to infiltrate America and I wanted to do America harm, what would I do? I would go to Mexico and I would cross over the border and get into the country. So, going back to the wall for a minute, we could have terrorists, we could have spies, all of these people that we're unaware in our country could be sneaking in, coming in. And yes, I have actually, read parts of the Quran, because again, being a free thinker, freedom of thought, needing to investigate things for myself, I wanted to know, what does it say? And in fact, their view of America and of us, of me and you, they think we should die. I mean, it's really a negative. We're called infidels. And there's just really some scary things that are there. Their ideology. Now, I'm not saying that all, you know, people that practice the Muslim faith are bad or maybe feel that way. But, you know, personally, me reading their book, you know, I read what it says, and it's quite scary, to be honest with you.
And it's real clear, too. There's no confusion about it. I've read the Quran, and I was the same as you, where I didn't want to rely on what other people would tell me. I wanted to know myself. And it does. It not just that they want to get rid of infidels, but they want to do it in a way that's the most painful. that right. We must experience the anguish of the fires and in the torment and pain and suffering. Over and over, Muhammad wishes that on non-believers. So I don't know what I think about all Muslims, but to me, the Quran is supposed to be a perfectly written book, and there aren't to be no alterations because it's from Muhammad himself, their prophet. And so if you believe that, then if you're a Muslim, then you must believe that book. And if you believe that book, then that's kind of, it's un-American. It's definitely un-American.
Yes, absolutely.
we're probably wandering into really deep waters here. We're going to take a quick break, Kristen. Don't go anywhere, folks. You're listening to Kristen Alamo Rowan. We're doing an interview. She's running for U.S. Congress, Congressional District 17. It's here in Texas. We'll be right back. All right, folks, Duke Machado, RNHA News Podcast, and we're back visiting with Kristen Alamo Rowan, congressional candidate, District 17 here in Texas, Republican, obviously. So, you know, Kristen, I've been watching these hearings, and I'm sure you have, with this impeachment. And now you have Congressman Nadler, a Democrat, running this second phase of inquiries. And you know, all of their experts that they bring up, all their professors and their scholars, they say the words that they have overwhelming evidence, evidence and proof multiple times where a President Trump has done something so bad that it warrants impeachment. And every time they say it, they think that the more times they say it, the more it's going to stick, obviously. So they're all repeating it over and over. But not once have they ever presented. I mean, I don't know what evidence they've ever presented. If you were on that committee, and if you have the option or opportunity to ask questions of some of these people, How would you hit them with questions? What would your line be? And how would you draw this to a conclusion?
So my take of it, I've been watching these proceedings, you know, in between traveling and visiting with people. I've tried to stay on top of it and in the know on everything that's going on. But honestly, it's the same thing over and over again. So, but I really applaud Matt Gaetz in the way that he has handled, you know, all of these proceedings, because the line of questioning that I would, you know, be presenting would be something that's simple for the American people to understand how much of a sham it is. And I think that he presented that whenever he, you know, asked, okay, well, how much have you donated to Hillary? How much did you donate to Obama? Have you donated? So it shows the bias of these so-called experts and witnesses. And that one lady that got up there that was, you know, a law professor, this mm-hmm. shows you how liberal our education systems are, by the way. These people are teaching your children. She got up there and looked like a fool because I don't know if you caught this, but when he was asking, you know, why she donated this, and she actually made the comment about, well, because people are poor. I don't know if you caught that, but I caught that, and I caught the disdain that she has and the way that she views, even the references to conservatives being, you know, in more spread out areas and liberals being closer together. And it shows their ideology, their disgusting view of the world. And so the line of questioning that I would have would be very simple, understandable to the American public that's watching, so they know what a complete shame it is. So I really applaud Matt Gaetz. I think that the line of questioning that he had would be very similar to the approach that I would take.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about schools. And you have kids?
I do. I have three boys.
So you're dealing with public schools?
I actually homeschool my children. My oldest is six, so he is, you know, school age, but we have taught him since he was, you know, three and four. We began those teaching moments, really trying to structure that even at those young ages. We do live in a great school district. Lorena is a smaller community there in the Waco area. And I am concerned that one day we might possibly send them to public schools, and the fact that public schools churn out our future. You know, children are the future. I myself am a millennial, and, you know, I am the future as well. And so the education system is so important to me, and it is alarming to me, all of the left-leaning ideology. And even, can you believe this? I'll tell you this. I went to a Q&A last night of the Waco ISD superintendent. It was hosted by the NAACP of Waco. I was shocked to know that the NAACP has a partnership with Waco ISD where they're involved in children's lives in that way. There were a lot of questions raised about race, and that is their focus. You know, it's just scary to me because, you know, I look at back what Martin Luther King said, you know, it was the content of the character, not the color of your skin. So to me, that was quite alarming. So yes, public school system is one of the concerns that we, you know, should be most worried about, because our children are the future.
A lot of these schools are just out of control. And there's no control in the schools. There's no discipline anymore. You know, you can't even look at a student wrong, or they're going to text their parents real quick. You know, these teachers are stripped of so much of their ability to control their students. And the students are just, I think I heard a statistic, 54% of our kids are dependent on some sort of drug to keep them stable. You have a lot of our schools overrun and putting major burdens on our schools that people can't even speak English. And you know, they're forcing us to deal with things, and they're forcing the taxpayers to foot the bill.
You know, there's a blurred line between personal responsibility and government responsibility, and even church responsibility. The way that, you know, we could work in harmony if all facets were doing their job, you know, the church's job to take care of the poor, the downtrodden of their, you know, of their group. If we were all part of a church, you know, and when we fall on hard times, the church picks us up. The government is supposed to be protecting our rights. You know, and they don't give our rights, but their purpose is to protect our rights. And then we are supposed to have personal responsibility. And, you know, I hear my husband and I, we talk about the fact that growing up, if you got in trouble at school, you also got in trouble at home. But, you know, as to what you said, now if a student gets in trouble at home, the parent is calling the school and blaming the school because their child can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many problems that if we do not start addressing them, because we're not, I don't feel that we are. And it is part of its culture, you know. Part of it is the culture, the ideology, you know, the disintegration of the family, of the family unit. Lots of problems, but I'm happy to see there are movements towards, you know, this conservative thought. And I do believe that we can restore our systems, our country, our family. I believe that we can restore that, but it's going to take work and it's going to take a fight.
So you called yourself a millennial, and with that, I'm going to take that and run with it on this. See, I've always felt like millennials are irrational because I've always felt like you guys weren't receiving the proper education and you guys were spoiled and, you know, the given trophies and things like that, right? So that's what someone my age thinks of millennials, but... But obviously, not all people in that age were that raised that way. But when it comes to our schools, and you know, these, I say it may be a generation of people who or more who aren't rational. They can't accept truth. They don't want to search for truth. You know, they believe in socialism. They truly believe that if our government were to collapse and we were to adopt socialism, that they somehow would be better off. And I don't know, it happened during your era, and obviously it's happening today. How is that growing? How is that philosophy of a socialist America growing?
So I have been an exception a lot of different times in my life. I am an old soul. You know, I was teaching Bible classes in middle school, and you know, I graduated college prior to graduating high school. I've done a lot of things. As I mentioned, my dad being you know, an immigrant, he taught me work ethic because he had nothing, and so. You know, my dad was a big part of my life and what he taught me, but also, you know, who had the biggest influence on my life was my grandparents that took me to church. You know, that is where I learned, you know, just life. That is where I learned, you know, about God and I mean, really conservative values. You know, it lines up with the Bible and biblical values. And honestly, I've said it multiple times this evening just talking with people, but there's a reason that they call TV programming. I don't know if you've seen those videos that show the different news media.
Oh,
that
yes, will, yes.
They repeat the same things over and over again, and it is psychological warfare. I mean, we are under attack, and most people don't realize it, and see, that's the problem. So, you know, if you're sitting at home, you're comfortable, unbeknownst to you, you're in the middle of a war. And that war is become an information war. And so now, as of this year, Fox, the company that owns Fox, is Disney now, mm-hmm. that owns it, as of this year. So now, all of the media is left-leaning. There is no conservative media anymore. And so that is a problem. That is the big problem. That is why socialism is made out to be this glamorous thing. These kids, and another thing, here's the other issue. So my dad told me, he said, whenever you leave my house, that's it. You know, you're on your own. So whenever I turned 18, you know, I had graduated with my real estate certificate. I was a realtor at the age of 18. I left his house. He did not help me financially. I was on my own, and I had to learn the hard way what it meant to pay taxes, what it meant to, you know, pay monthly bills that come every month and to survive. And I think that, again, part of the cultural problem is the parents of this generation are too afraid of letting their children feel pain and to fall. They are so coddling them. Like you say, the participation trophy, so no one's feelings are hurt, so no one's disappointed. That is playing a part into this system that we are in, that, you know, this war that we're in. It's, and again, the cultural, I mentioned that earlier, the whole cultural thing. So there's a lot of aspects that go into it, but honestly, socialism is glamorized. And, you know, they're taught these talking points, again, through that programming. They know how to repeat the ideology in that way, and that they, again, real world experience. That's where I learned, and that's why I'm conservative. You know, growing up, politics wasn't actually talked about. You know, I didn't know about politics, Republican, Democrat. I actually was not exposed to that. I don't recall that. You know, but what formed my ideas was life experience.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm glad that you're not a political insider. I'm glad you haven't been crafting yourself for this. You know, there's too many people who want to make this a career and get rich. And
yes.
You know, there's
that's
a problem. And No one wants that kind of person. I mean, yes, it's you get paid if you're there. Sure, that's great. But you know, when people come out after a few years and they're multimillionaires, that makes no sense to me.
I see a problem. Actually, that's kind of in line with the whole healthcare thing, because big pharma and the way that they operate in putting profits over people. People don't understand why that is. They know that it exists, but they don't know why that is. The problem is that the government has become friends with big business and industries, and they're running different monopolies and scratching backs. And so, you know, all this lobbying and all this, it's just a big money game. And for me, you know, I'm a little guy. I am hustling. I am not asking for money. If people feel led to donate, that's wonderful. But, you know, I know what it's going to take to win is to meet the people, because I'm a little person and there's more of us than there are of them. And it's time for us to take it back. We've got to fix it before we reach a point of no return. And honestly, you know, corruption in all forms, no matter if there's a D or R behind your name, is unacceptable.
Yeah, that's true. And I hope that when all this impeachment nonsense gets rolling, I'm thinking there's going to be some Democrats in trouble, and I hope we don't let off the gas when that time comes. We Republicans have a tendency to kind of lay down a little bit at that time. Democrats, they don't slow down at all. They put the pedal to the metal and they run over you and they back up over you, make sure they did it right. So I'll give you the final word, final message to the listeners, and we'll get our program wrapped up.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on. Like I say, I'm out there hustling. My campaign slogan is for the people. I am not doing this for a political purpose. I'm doing this for a higher purpose. God has called me to do this. My husband is the one that told me to consider running, and I kind of brushed him off. But after his insistence, I decided to go to God in prayer and just to, you know, seek God's direction, and he has called me to be here. And so that is why I'm here. I will fight for people. You know, my family I love so dearly. We are affected by all of the things that Washington is doing. And I feel that it would be in the people's best interest to send someone who is actually affected by the legislation. You know, these politicians up there, they don't feel the effects like we do. And so I am truly for and by the people. And I want to make it there. I want to have a testimony to show that it didn't take money. It took truth, and it took someone standing up for freedom and for conservative values to make it there.
Awesome. Well, Kristen, I appreciate you taking time and joining us on the program. Kristen Alamo Rowan, you have a website?
I do. It is karforcongress.com. So we have an AOC. I am KAR, and I cannot wait to make her look foolish whenever I get up there.
That's a great motivation. All right, folks. Duke Machado, RNHA News Podcast. We've been visiting with Kristen Alamo Rowan, congressional candidate, CD17 here in Texas. Appreciate you calling in again, Kristen. Duke Machado, RNHA News Podcast, and we're out of here.